Golf Smarter number 172 for April 1st, 2009. And trust me, there are no April Fool's jokes here. Everything we announce in today's episode is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but...
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
The first conversation ever with a groundskeeper, Scott Shunter of Edgewood Tahoe.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thanks for downloading another episode of the Golf Smarter podcast. Yes, we're a day late. My sincere apologies. I hope it didn't screw up your listening schedule. I am incredibly excited about our program today because there is so much to share with you. First and foremost, we have our very first conversation with a golf course superintendent, which was interesting for me because it allows us to look at a golf course from a different perspective than we're used to. And he also provides insight to strategy that will help your next round. We'll also announce what may be the most exciting giveaway we've ever had on Golf Smarter. A new video and news about the all-new GolfSmarter.com and Golf Smarter for members only. But first, have I got a story for you. This past weekend was my annual golf trip with three of my closest friends. For the first time, we went to play in Las Vegas. And even though you provided me some great suggestions, we ended up playing Royal Links, Desert Pines, Valley High, all within the view of the Strip, and the Arroyo at Red Rock in Summerlin, about 20 minutes from the Strip. Many of you suggested that I try to secure interviews with Butch Harmon and Natalie Gulbis, but the tour season's in full swing and neither were available. So, you know what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas? Well, forget it. I'm taking this story with me and sharing it for forever. So indulge me. I flew direct on Southwest Airlines from San Francisco to Las Vegas late Thursday night, taking the last flight out of SFO. Now, I have a great travel bag that holds my clubs, a weekend's worth of clothes, my toiletries, a couple pair of shoes, and I actually had five boxes of Dixon Earth golf balls with me. I was traveling with one friend, and the others had already arrived from Seattle and Chicago. My traveling companion, let's just call him E, has the same travel bag that I do, because I love mine so much, I gave it to him as a birthday present. So my bag didn't arrive in Vegas. No bag, no clubs, no clothes, nothing. Which means I had to play with rentals all weekend. Luckily, every course had the same clubs to rent, the Callaway X22 irons with the Callaway Diablo driver and fairway woods. There was also a putter, which I hated, so I borrowed and swapped with both E and RB. So you can imagine how bummed out I was. But I did my best to keep it out of my mind while playing. Probably it hurt me most while putting. Anyway, on Friday we played 36 holes, and I didn't play too badly. Pretty windy all day, but otherwise shot an 89 and a 91. On Saturday we played the Arroyo, and even though we were teeing off just after sunrise, once the sun was a little higher in the sky, it was a beautiful day, perfect weather, and little to no wind. Again, overall I was playing fairly well. After three straight pars to open, I had my first one of two blow-up holes of the day and tripled on number four, which, I'd like to add, was the number one handicap hole of the course. I bogeyed the next eight consecutive holes and parred number 13. Then we come to a par three that's playing about 125 yards to a front pin on a narrow green. I had honors and explained to my friends that with the narrow green, you need to get a high shot so the ball can have a nice soft landing and not roll much. They're like, yeah, yeah, shut up and hit the ball. None of us are skilled enough to get backspin on our shot. So anyway, I took my shot and it takes a really nice ball flight and headed right at the pin, bounces once and disappears. I look at them. I said, did that just go in the hole? He says, no, 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 went off the back of the green. RB couldn't tell where it was, and actually Mike, our fourth, he had his back to the shot. He was standing against a tree. The debate continued, and everyone was just assuming that it went off the back to what looked to be an elevated green with thick rough in the back. And as we're driving to the hole and getting closer and closer, I keep saying, I still don't see the ball. I still don't see the ball. We can tell now that the green is really not elevated, but the rough is thick and easily could have been hiding the ball. Mike and RB are the first ones on the green, and they walk right to the hole, look down, and start to scream, "It's here! It's here! Your ball's in the cup! You got a hole in one! Oh my God, my first hole in one! Amazing! I couldn't believe it." But none of us, and here's what's incredible, none of us have ever been in a foursome that witnessed an ace. So this was really exciting for all of us. And I've got a little video on the homepage of the new GolfSmarter.com, so you'll hopefully get to see some of my excitement. But I have been calling everyone. I am so excited to tell you about it. I got a hole in one. Now, our guest today is Scott Shunter. Thanks. Our guest today is Scott Shunter, who's the golf course superintendent at Edgewood Tahoe in State Line, Nevada. It's just on the border of California, Nevada. Edgewood is a seasonal course, and we recorded this conversation at the end of last season before they closed for the winter. I spoke to them this morning, and they've already started watering, so they could be open by the time you hear this. You're probably familiar with this course because it's the host of the American Century Celebrity Golf Championship each summer. It's not a PGA Tour stop, but the fun event is on network TV, and it features a lot of the biggest names in sports. During our conversation, we traveled around the golf course to talk about various issues groundskeepers face, including maintenance, water, playability, and for Scott, the impact of hosting an annual event that draws tens of thousands of people over a very short period of time. I found this conversation really enlightening, and I hope you do too. Stay tuned, because right after the conversation, I have a bunch of really exciting announcements. So we're going to go right now to that conversation, and as always, I open with this statement. Welcome to Golf Smarter, Scott.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And tell me about what you do here at Edgewood Tahoe Golf Course.
I am the golf course superintendent, which essentially means I take care of everything outside the clubhouse. My primary duty is maintaining the golf course daily routines and making sure the golf course is in as good a condition as it can be for each individual day.
And how large of a staff do you have?
Right now, we're running about 35 people. We have five that are full-time year-round and 30 seasonal.
Okay, and when you talk about seasonal, you have, this is not a 12-month-a-year golf course.
No, we're going to be somewhere in that 6 to 7 month range as far as staying open. It all depends on what Mother Nature lets us do.
And so it's not dictated by the calendar, it really is dictated by Mother Nature.
Yes, exactly. In October, it can be 65, 70 and sunny, or we could have a foot of snow on the ground. So it just depends on what Mother Nature allows us to do.
Let's talk about the area where we are. As far as your perspective, what you have to be looking for, what you have to look at.
To me, Lake Tahoe's a lot easier than what I've been used to growing up and working in the Midwest. The weather is so much more predictable here. There's a lack of humidity, which greatly reduces the disease issues. And the variation from day to day weather-wise is not as great here as it would be in Minnesota or Iowa, where I've been used to working. So to a degree, it's a lot easier here because everything is so much more predictable.
Plus, you're probably in one of the most beautiful places in the world, Lake Tahoe. Now, you're on the south shore of Lake Tahoe, so you're actually in Nevada, not in California.
Correct. We are on the southeast corner of Lake Tahoe, and we are literally right on the California line. In fact, we have one tee that is in California. The gold tee on number 9 is in California.
But you don't need a passport to get over to that tee box.
Not yet. Give them time. Exactly. I'm sure they're working on it. And you're correct. We're in a location that is unmatched by any other.
As we record this conversation, we're in the mid-September time frame, and your season is coming to a close. We're on the fairway of number 2, and there's a lot of work that's being done right now on this fairway. Can you explain what it is that you're doing and why?
Well, what we're doing is a deep verticut of the fairways using a machine called the Graden, and the purpose is to essentially dethatch the fairways. And the thatch layer is, it would be analogous to a carpet pad in your house, where a little bit of thatch is beneficial, but when you get excessive thatch over 3/4 of an inch or an inch, then it starts to become a detriment because it has a tendency to repel water. It likes to harbor insects and is also has a tendency to increase the disease pressure. When you play golf, it starts to make it feel like you're playing on a sponge as opposed to a nice firm fairway. And with this with the grading, we can go in and be very aggressive in the dethatching process and remove a great amount of the thatch in a very simple process. Unfortunately, the downside is, as you can see, is it is a little messy and it is a little disruptive.
How often do you have to do it?
Right now, we are on a schedule to do it in spring and fall. But it's one of those jobs that, to maintain the quality that we demand, it's something that we have to do.
So when you say you do it in spring and fall, do you do the entire course spring and fall, or do you cut the course in half and say we're going to do part of the course in the spring and then we're going to finish it up before we close up in the fall?
We do every fairway spring and fall. And then we also will try to do the tees at least once a year, and we will use a similar machine on the greens. It's a graden with the sand injector, and what that does is as it cuts the groove and dethatches the green and cuts a groove in the green, it fills the groove up with sand in the same process. So we're able to remove the thatch and get the sand into the top inch or so of the green, which greatly helps us in removal of the thatch, and it also gives us a much firmer playing surface.
Is this unique to a Lake Tahoe course, or is this done at all courses across the country?
It's done on virtually all golf courses throughout the country. We're a little more aggressive with it because we've had some pretty healthy thatch layers that have developed, but virtually every golf course will go through something similar to this at one point or another.
How old, how mature is this golf course?
The golf course opened in 1969, so this is our 40th year in operation. With a golf course of this age, there is a lot more preventive maintenance that has to be undertaken than with a newer golf course.
With a mature golf course like this one, how would the normal golfer know the difference? What would they recognize being the difference between a mature course and a newer course as far as the fairways, the grasses?
I think with the newer golf courses, you don't have the thatch buildup, so generally they play much firmer, and even to a degree, a lot of them play very hard, to where they haven't had that thatch buildup, so they don't have that little cushion. So it's very firm and a lot of times hard. Whereas the older golf courses have developed the thatch layer, so they have a tendency to play a little softer at times. And I think with the older golf courses, for the most part, you get a little more consistency because they've had their time to mature and develop. And I think with the newer golf courses, obviously you have a lot better purity of the chosen grass, whether it's bluegrass or bent grass. They haven't had the time to have the POA infiltrate the golf course or take over the golf course. And the POA is POA annua, which is it's basically a type of grass, but it's a weed. And in certain places in the country, such as Pebble Beach, it's desirable because the environmental and the weather conditions are perfect for it. But when you go to some of the other areas of the country, such as Lake Tahoe or the Midwest or East Coast, it's a less desirable plant because it doesn't have the heat tolerance and it's not as strong of a plant as what the bent grass is. And then the other issue, which is very prevalent here, is the POA doesn't have the winter tolerance. So it's a lot more likely to have winter kill issues with POA as opposed to a pure bent grass golf course.
How would the average golfer recognize what kind of grass they're playing on? Can the average golfer recognize the difference of grasses?
Yes, the average golfer can. On a pure POA golf course, they won't be able to. But when you get that in a pure bent grass golf course, obviously there's no POA, so it's irrelevant. But when you get into the stages in between, what you'll see is clumpiness, or you'll see the grass, different grasses kind of segregate out, and they start as small little spots. Like generally POA comes in the ball marks, so it'll be about a quarter size spot of a kind of a lime green, light green. It has a different appearance from everything else, and it's very typical to see seed heads on the POA, even mowing at an eighth of an inch. So that's a big indicator also. Another good way to tell is late in the day, as the sun is setting, you get the long sun angles across the green. You'll see the different variations because the POA and the bent grass grow at different rates. So that's where the bumpiness and the unevenness comes in later in the day, is because the POA has grown just a fraction of an inch more than the bent grass has.
You mentioned before that there's not a lot of humidity here in the Lake Tahoe area from where you're used to working in the Midwest. What are the water issues that happen here? I guess you're in Nevada, but California, Nevada. What do you have right now that, and there seem to be a lot of water issues in California. What's going on for you?
There's a lot of water issues going on throughout the country. Water is probably the number one issue in the golf course industry right now. I think it was very well evidenced last year in the southeast in Georgia when they had the multiple water restrictions going on. So I think as a rule, all golf courses throughout the country are doing what they can to maximize the efficient use of the water that they do have. For us here, we're pretty fortunate that we've got a pretty good stable water supply. As long as we keep getting snow in the wintertime in the mountains. Our water supply is fed via creek. It's snow melt out of the mountains. So we have a pretty consistent, solid water source, and it hasn't been a big issue for us as of yet. But because it hasn't been an issue doesn't mean we're not addressing ways to conserve water and be much more efficient with what we do have.
Is it a huge expense for golf courses, the water?
It can range from anywhere from free to $1 million+ a year.
I mean, I would think down like in Palm Springs and in Phoenix area, a lot of the desert courses, it must be a huge issue and a huge expense.
It is, and it's not uncommon where a golf course will spend over $1 million a year just to buy water to water the golf course. The one issue that is becoming more prevalent is the use of effluent water or treated sewer water. That's becoming a much greater usage nowadays because the water usage is such a hot button topic. We have not got to that point yet, but I know there's a great percentage of the golf courses are in the Phoenix area, for example, are using effluent water simply because it is such a precious item right now.
It seems that you were speaking before about the snow and the snowpack, and you have snow coming in probably towards late, obviously through the winter, but not so much when you get to springtime, you're not going to have that. And in courses that have a high humidity areas, you'll get a lot of rain, a lot of moisture throughout the spring, summer, and fall months. What kind of rainfall, what kind of moisture do you get here in the main seasons of play?
We had 0.7 inch of rain about 7 weeks ago, and that's been it since Memorial Day.
And we're in September now, and
yes.
So really, you don't get any rain at all. Once it clears off, you're done.
Exactly. We cannot count on rainfall. Memorial weekend, we had some snow flurries and we had a little bit of moisture here and there. And essentially since, I would say mid-April, we've had a grand total of maybe an inch of rain precipitation. So it's something that we cannot rely on it. Granted, this is a little bit of an unusual year. They typically have a couple more thunderstorms than what we've had, but it's just in the Midwest in July, August, you know it's going to rain. You're going to have the thunderstorms, you're going to get the rain, and it's going to be there. We cannot rely on that here. We have to rely on the winter snowfall to carry us throughout the season.
Is rain a groundskeeper's friend?
Always. Well, to a degree. A little is good, but a lot is bad. Mm. And I would much rather deal with the situation where we're not getting rain and using irrigation water, because it gives us a much greater control over how much water we put it and where we put it. And it's much easier to control when it's dry than when it's wet. If it's overly wet, there's nothing you can do. You just sit in the shop and wait for it to dry out.
You have the luxury of really predictable weather, of knowing when the snowfall is going to be, knowing how long it's going to take for it to melt down. There are other parts of the country, and we've had some terrible hurricanes mm-hmm. in the southeast, in the Gulf Coast area, with Ike and Gustav at this point, and there'll probably be more. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there have been some serious effects on golf courses with hurricanes like that, and they've probably been completely underwater. Yep. Have you ever had to deal with that yourself?
To a degree, yes. Not with the entire golf course underwater, but I've dealt with having two or three holes underwater. And in fact, one of the golf courses I worked at, the first golf course I ever worked at in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, they went through the tremendous floods this spring. And I know a lot of the golf courses in that area were devastated by the floods. And one of the other ones was Vinker Golf Course in Ames, Iowa. I worked there for a while. And at that time, this was 20-some years ago, they dealt with floods all way back then, and it would flood out their maintenance shop. It wouldn't be unusual to see a pond out there with a flag sticking up out of it.
So, what's the recovery process for flooding like that? What do they have to do, the groundskeepers, and how long does that take so it's playable again?
It really depends on how long it's been underwater and what kind of water it is. If it's fairly clean water and not muddy river water, and you don't get a lot of siltation built up on the green on the golf course, it's not nearly as bad. If you've got the muddy river water, or with the hurricanes, for example, if you've got the salt water, then it's a much longer, arduous task to get it cleaned up. And in terms of silt, the first thing you can do, which kind of sounds odd that you're coming out of a flooded golf course, but you have to fire up the irrigation and wash down all the silt to try and remove all the silt that you can, because that suffocates the grass. And depending on how long it's underwater, some of it can survive, and if it's been underwater or silt for quite a while, you're back to day one, and you're starting over.
So for the golf courses down in the Gulf Coast that have been devastated, I'm sure, like in Galveston area, yep. they've been devastated, when could they expect to reopen? How many months, weeks, months, years will it take for them to be operational once again?
You know, to be honest, without going through it, I have no idea, but I would venture to say anywhere from 3 months to a year before they're back to where they were. And the issue with the hurricanes is you're dealing with the salt water, and the salt and grass don't go well together. And what they're dealing with now is they're trying to get their irrigation going so they can flush the salts through the soil. well, they have no power, so they're kind of in a very difficult situation that I don't envy them, and I wish them all the best of luck. It's not something I want to go through.
Scott, we've now driven down to the 16th green, which is a long par 5 that comes from, feels like the mountaintops, and all the way down the hill and ends up at the water of Lake Tahoe. Got some maintenance guys doing some work here. And as we turn the corner, we go along the water to a par 3, very famous par 3, number 17. We've seen it on TV every summer for a pretty major tournament. Tell me your experience with what goes on when you have thousands of people lining your fairways.
It's a madhouse. It's you have no control over them. You know, it just kind of becomes a free-for-all. It's actually kind of the highlight of the year, though, because it gives us a chance that we can showcase to the country and I think even worldwide kind of what we do, and this is the product that we give our players every day. So for us, it's kind of an opportunity to kind of puff out our chests and say, here's what we can do.
And what is the event again? Tell us, remind us what the event is.
It's the American Century Championship. It's kind of the celebrity championship. You know, I think the headliners this year was Tony Romo, Michael Jordan, Charles Barkley, kind of some of the biggest names in movies and athletics and sports. And it's a six-day event that gives them an opportunity to come out here and play golf and kind of have a little competition, kind of rechannel their competitive blood, and just to have a good time. It's very, very relaxed, very laid back, you know, kind of typical Tahoe to me.
It's not, come on. You had, you don't just have these players coming out. The public gets to come out and watch these stars play. How many people did you have attend the event last year?
This year was another record for us. We had, for the 6 days, we had, I believe it was 31,000 come out here for the week.
Right.
So very successful.
That's amazing. So you're getting over 100,000 people over 6 days?
No. It was 31,000 for the entire tournament.
You still have 31,000. Yeah.
That's still significant.
Yeah, you have a lot of people. You have 30,000 people coming out over a six-day period, and you said it's very loose and laid back. It can't be for you.
It is.
I don't buy it.
I went through the 1991 U.S. Open, where we dealt with 50,000 people a day. I've built a Jack Nicklaus golf course. I've built an Arnold Palmer golf course. And this is easy for me. You know, with the background that I've had and the stuff that I've done, yeah, you know, yes, there's a lot of pressure because it's on national TV and they are playing for a fair amount of money, but the way I see it is if I'm uptight and nervous about what's going on, it's going to trickle down to everybody else on the staff.
And good for you.
And as long as I maintain my perspective and look at it as no big deal, everybody else will stay relaxed with it as well. And I think that's when you produce your best work, is when you're relaxed.
You're a golfer.
Yes, I am.
On a 1 to 10 scale, as far as playability, as far as difficulty, because I know it's like a 131 from the whites here. How do you rank this golf course?
Depends on how straight you hit the ball. If you keep the ball in play, it's a difficult but playable golf course. If you're hitting the driver crooked, it's a brutal golf course because it's a fairly tight corridors on quite a few holes with a lot of trees. And once you get into the trees, it's awful hard to get out of them because they eat you up.
You obviously were watching me play the other day. So now, as far as condition of a golf course, how do you rank this golf course?
Right now, I would say we're probably a little above average by typical golfer scale. By my scale, we're average. I think we've got a long ways to go, and we've made some very good progress this year in improving the conditions. And it's something we strive to improve every day. And one of the sayings I like to tell everybody is, we don't want to keep up with the Joneses, we want to be the Joneses. We want to be the trendsetters. We want to set the standards that everybody else is trying to match.
I know that a lot of golfers, when they review a golf course, not professional writers, but people, bloggers, and just your average player, when they rate a golf course or they brag about a golf course that they've been to, what they focus on is the beauty of the golf course. Not playability necessarily, but just like the surroundings, the scenery. So why don't you go ahead, and I'll give you the opportunity, why don't you tell me how you would rate this golf course on that scale?
From the aesthetics?
Yeah.
It's off the charts. I've never been to Pebble Beach, but I can't think of a better location and a better setting for a golf course than right here on the shores of Lake Tahoe. You have the mountains, you have a tremendous lake, you've got the pine trees, we have everything here that you could desire for in a golf course.
So mostly on the Golf Smarter podcast, we talk a lot about course management. We talk about strategy of a golf course. But what we don't talk about is course management from your perspective. If I give you the opportunity here to talk to the Golf Smarter audience globally about course management on a maintenance side, on a groundskeeper's perspective, what kind of advice would you like to give us?
From my perspective, everything begins and ends at the greens. So in terms of when I'm playing golf, I like to think from the green backwards to the tee, and that's how I play golf, and that's how I manage the golf course. The greens, in my mind, are the absolute priority because that's where half the game is played. Look for consistency from hole to hole, and that's what I think that's what we strive for, is to try and have every hole play the same that day. We deal with a very uncertain environment, dealing with the weather. It's virtually impossible to maintain the golf course in the exact same condition 2 days in a row. There's even in Lake Tahoe, where there is no weather variability, it's a different golf course every day. And I think if the average golfer would just stop and take the golf course for what it is that day, and not what it was yesterday or what it could be tomorrow, and not what the neighbors down the street are. It is just take that individual golf course on that individual day and accept it for what it is and enjoy it as much as you can.
And please fix your divots.
Divots and ball marks, please. Please, I'm begging you. Please fix ball marks. That's one of the biggest banes that we have, is maintaining divots and ball marks. So please repair them every time.
Scott Shunter, you're the head groundskeeper for the Edgewood Tahoe Golf Course. Really appreciate your time and your tee tour of such a magnificent course. Wish you best of luck in the future and, of course, on these huge events every summer.
I appreciate it. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to be on your show.
In conjunction with this interview, I've posted some photos of this course that I took just after sunrise, and it was a gorgeous day. They're actually some of my best golf course pictures ever. Now, when you come to the new golfsmarter.com, you'll see that our program guide blog is on the main page, and you can listen to the show right there in addition to looking at the photos. And before I get into more detail about golfsmarter.com and Golf Smarter for members only, let me tell you about an exclusive Golf Smarter package that we've arranged with Edgewood Tahoe. As we discussed, the American Century Celebrity Golf Championship will be held from July 14 to 19, 2009, and we have one-day passes and full-week passes for the event for you to win. We'll be awarding 3 one-day passes to Golf Smarter listeners and 7 one-day passes for members only, 2 one-week passes to Golf Smarter listeners, and 3 one-week passes for members only. So already you can see how you increase your chances of winning by joining Golf Smarter for members only. But there's so much more. How would you like to play a couple of rounds at Edgewood Tahoe and stay in their private 4,000 square foot, $1,500 per night lodge. Yep. Two nights in the lodge with its own private beach on south shore of Lake Tahoe and two rounds of golf on the Monday and Tuesday immediately following the Celebrity Championship. One winner will be awarded from Golf Smarter and one winner for members only. Each winner will be allowed to bring one guest for the golf and the stay in the lodge. So all four of you will be staying in this huge lodge right on Lake Tahoe, which is less than a mile from the casinos. But you won't be playing golf together because you will each get a round of golf with me. Sorry, that's the consolation prize. I get to play golf too, but I'll play with both of you on separate days. Now, there's a lot to absorb here, I know. So instead of me repeating it all again, just go ahead and rewind and listen on your iPod. Back up just a little bit and hear it again so you can get all the stuff that we have to give away. Passes, golf, night stay, unbelievable. Transportation to Lake Tahoe is not provided in any of this, but between the accommodations and golf, this prize has a value of nearly $4,000 per couple. Deadline for entry is May 15, 2009. We're going to do this a while, so everybody's going to get a chance to win, and we'll announce the winners on May 19th. Hey, but there's more things I'm giving away, you know. You still have a couple of days left to enter and win a set of clubs from One Iron Golf, three through pitching wedge, and the One Iron Golf banner's right there on the contest page. The button for it is now at the bottom of golfsmarter.com. You'll just hit contest, and it'll take you there. Deadline for entry for the One Iron Golf is Friday, April 3rd, 2009. You also have till April 10th. To enter to be one of five winners of a box of Dixon Earth tournament quality golf balls with the Golf Smarter logo. These are the very first eco-friendly golf balls to be approved by the USGA. But there's another way for you to get a free box of Dixon Earth golf balls with the Golf Smarter logo, and that's by joining Golf Smarter for members only. Today is our first day that you can join, and we really hope that you'll take advantage of what we have to offer. A six-month membership gives you complete access to the entire archives of Golf Smarter episodes all the way back to December of 2005. That's over 100 hours of interesting, educational, and entertaining conversations about golf. I spoke to Mike Edmonds, a listener in Flagstaff, Arizona, just this week, and he's only been listening for a few weeks and is very excited about going back to hear shows with Dr. Joe Parent, Jim Waldron, Tom Wishon, Catherine Roberts, Jim Fazio, Tina Mickelson, and a whole lot more. Your membership also entitles you to 6-month subscription to Fairways and Greens magazine and a 15% discount coupon for rockbottomgolf.com. Those are all great gifts that more than covers the cost of membership. But you're here for content, and as a member, you will continue to get new episodes of Golf Smarter every week. If you choose not to become a member, Golf Smarter will still be published for free every other week, but some of the interviews may be edited. For example, our upcoming episode with Fred Shoemaker of Extraordinary Golf is an hour long, and members will hear the conversation in its entirety. Members will also be able to receive discounts from selected golf companies who've been featured on previous episodes, and members will automatically be entered in members-only giveaways that we're hoping to have every members-only episode. So wherever you live in the world, credit cards are accepted on our site. Go to golfsmarter.com and sign up today to Golf Smarter for members only. Thanks so much for your support. And thanks for sticking with me on this episode. I know there was a lot of news and information, but as always, I appreciate you being there and all the nice things that you've had to say, not only in iTunes, writing a review, but writing to me as well. Now, we closed this week by heading back to our list of smart-ass replies from caddies that seems to be appropriate for a show about Lake Tahoe. Thanks again to Tim Musson of Nottinghamshire, UK, for sending in this list. In total frustration, the annoyed golfer says to the caddy, I'm going to drown myself in the lake. And the caddy smugly says, do you think you can keep your head down that long? Please come to our redesigned website and let me know what you think. The Hey Fred button pops up when you scroll over feedback at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. delivering sound advice.